Hey guys, welcome to the 330 Sports Show. Today is Tuesday, February 1st, 2022. My name is Justin Coffin, and this is a Youngstown studio production. We're downtown Youngstown. We're live today. Thursday, we probably will not have a live show. We will be, we will have a Winter Olympic type show for you, but we will not be live as an impending, ice snowstorm, I guess, depends on where you look or if we're supposed to get a foot of snow or an inch of ice. Either way, it does not look super pretty. So that's where we're at right now. But what we're going to do on today's show, we are going to talk about the kind of the weekend that was. The Super Bowl matchups are set. We're going to talk about the AFC, NFC championship weekends. We're going to talk, we had the official announcement from Tom Brady. He is now officially retired, along with the another quarterback a little bit west of here, or excuse me, a little bit east of here, that officially announced his retirement too over the weekend. Not quite as heralded as Tom Brady, but Mr. Ben Roethlisberger as well is on his way out. So again, we're going to recap real quick. The 49ers unfortunately lose to the Rams, depending on who you're rooting for. And this seems to be like a big thing on social media. It's like, if you're a Browns fan, you're not allowed to root for the Rams because OBJ is there. And if you're a Browns fan, you're some people are, you know, have pledged their allegiance to Cincinnati because they're from the conference. Some people have said, well, they're in our conference, so you can't root for them. I say root for whoever you want. To me, it doesn't matter. Joe, is there any rules on who you can or can't root for depending on where you're?
Okay, so I gotta go with the Bengals. I mean, they're in your conference, so it makes sense to support.
Sure.
You know, they're not a rival. I don't have hatred for them. There's no bad blood. But the OBJ thing, it just exposes like some wound from very recent. It hurts a little bit.
That's so fair.
So I'm glad to see two different teams in the Super Bowl, and that I'll leave it at that.
I agree with that, definitely. It's kind of nice to not have Kansas City in there. It's kind of nice to not have Tom Brady in there.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of like reset the whole thing. And you get, you know, the Bengals, who are ahead of schedule. I don't think anyone, you know, I think most people picked them to finish last in the AFC North, let alone, you know, win the AFC North and then win the AFC. So what they have done is well ahead of schedule, I think, for their fans, and just caught the league kind of by surprise.
I'm telling you, exciting offenses are so much fun to watch.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what you're going to get in this game for sure. They both have opportunistic defenses and very, very good offenses. The Rams, I'll spend a little bit more time on that next week because we have that kind of buffer week in between. Oh, and I did see, by the way, there was a promo for the Pro Bowl, which will be this coming weekend, but there's a skills competition too.
Is
there
really?
So it should be kind of cool. Right. I'm sure they'll do some kicking stuff and some, you know, quarterback challenges and skill position challenges. I don't know what you can really have the offensive or defensive linemen do. Maybe, you know, weightlifting challenges or something like that. But it's in Vegas, so I mean, it's probably more of a reward than anything. You know, you go to Vegas, get a trip out of it, have some fun. It's not quite Hawaii, but you know, it is what it is, so you'll take it. So again, the Bengals and Chiefs, they go to overtime. You know, they have the coin flip, which again, always take tails, never fails. So the Bengals pick heads, they lose. You think it's over because you think Mahomes and the Chiefs are going to go down and score. They don't. Cincinnati forces an interception, and the rest is history. You know, Cincinnati got that stop, and, you know, we're here now. So we got the Rams and we got the Bengals. And interestingly enough, 1981 and 1988 are the two previous years where Cincinnati has made the Super Bowl. And or at least the 1981 season and the 1988 season. So technically the following year, but both years they played the 49ers. So it kind of was trending that way to look like it was going to be a Bengals 49ers Super Bowl matchup, but did not pan out that way. So anyway, credit to the Bengals defense. They really did a nice job, held the Chiefs to 83 yards, 3 points, and 2 interceptions in 7 drives after halftime. So pretty impressive stuff. They were down 21-3, come back and win. So again, they tied the biggest deficit in AFC championship game history to come back from an 18-point deficit and win. And again, the Bengals' third Super Bowl appearance. And if you count Joe Burrow does have a degree from Ohio State. He spent 3 years there and 2 years at LSU. You can count 5 Cincinnati Bengals that are Ohio State Buckeyes on that roster. I believe it's Prince, an offensive lineman, and then you have Burrow, if you count him, that's up for debate. And then you got three defenders, Eli Apple, you got Von Bell, and the other guy's escaping me right now, and Sam Hubbard is the third guy. So with that, let's look at the other game real quick. San Francisco and LA, Sean McVay and the Rams finally end the 49ers 6-game winning streak. They were down 17-7 at the start of the fourth quarter, which tied the biggest comeback in NFC championship game history. Cooper Kupp sets the all-time NFL record by a wide receiver with his 13th 100-yard game, and he also has the triple crown in receiving this year. Most receptions, most yards, most touchdowns. Just an unbelievable game. And our old friend Joe, Odell Beckham, with his first 100-yard receiving game in, I believe, since mid-2019. So it's been quite a while for him. Stafford is the 7th quarterback in NFL history in his first year with that team to make it to a Super Bowl. Tom Brady and Trent Dilfer were the only two to actually win that Super Bowl. And then this is the second year in a row. If you remember last year, Tampa won the Super Bowl at their home stadium in Tampa. And this year, the Los Angeles Rams, who also share that stadium, SoFi Stadium, with the Los Angeles Chargers, will also host the Super Bowl. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a home field advantage, because those tickets get bought up and shared and whatever. So should be an interesting game. We'll talk about the game plenty, but I do want to share this with you. This was one of the most interesting things I saw. So you guys know we've all been picking the playoff games and stuff. And, you know, I think this past weekend I actually went 0-1-1. Lost the it looked good with the Chiefs up 21-3, had the Chiefs plus -7. The Bengals actually went straight up, and then had the 49ers plus 3, so they actually pushed. But look at this. This is from I believe this is from Bleacher Report betting or one of those sites. But this one guy, he threw $20 on a two-leg parlay. So a two-leg parlay means you have to hit both bets for the bet to win. So he put a bet, which I didn't even know you could do this, on the exact score of both games. So his odds, let me check the numbers here, were 2,895,000 to 1 odds on a $20 bet. So he cashes out the $20 bet at about $579,000. So how about a pretty good weekend for that guy on a $20 bet? Guess the exact score of both games. And you got to think how many different factors go into that. I mean, you know, a miss kick or, you know, just a turnover, that game going to overtime, you know, different scenarios, different situations like that. So, you know, that might happen every now and then where you're rarely guess a perfect score on a game, but that's pretty unheard of right there. Yeah,
the San Francisco game, those are pretty round numbers, but
yeah,
the Bengals game, those yeah, aren't as round.
Exactly.
Like, on a block pool, like maybe that's my third selection because that's not one that's super likely.
Right, yeah. You know, for the Chiefs, they had to get 3 touchdowns and a field goal. The Bengals actually had a 2-point conversion somehow in there. So I think they had like 4 field goals, something like that. So however the numbers added up, I can't remember exactly. That's pretty impressive. Yeah. So to just get that dead on. And, you know, if I made that bet, you know, it looks like the Bengals and Chiefs were plus 22,000 on that. I'm probably hedging the second one, you know, throw another $10 bet on the exact score or $20 bet on the exact score of the other one. But pretty impressive stuff right there from that better. It's like, that's just some stuff you don't really see. Let's take a look at the early lines. We're not going to pick the game yet. We'll do that next game or next week, excuse me. But again, right now, 8-3-1 against the spread this playoff season. I think that's pretty solid. And that's going 0-1 this past weekend. 0-1-1 this past weekend. But right now, I believe the Rams opened up at a 3.5-point favorite. That quickly jumped up to 4. I've seen some lines at 4.5. This was from Fox SportsBet.com. So right now, the Rams at a 4-point favorite. If you bet the money line, you got to bet $189 to win 100 on the Rams. And if you bet $100 on the Bengals to win straight up, you would win 160. The over-under is basically right at the 50 mark, 49.5. And both ways are minus 110. So if you're not a big gambler, that's technically called the juice on that. So you got to put up a little bit more money to win the money, if that makes sense. So that's where we're at with next week's game. So again, there will be a little bit of a week of, you know, prep. I'm sure the teams will be able to get a little couple days rest, get some players healthy. Then they'll fly out there early. They'll have your media day and all that stuff, and you know, all the festivities that go along with the Super Bowl. So that should be pretty cool. But the Rams, it's kind of nice for them. They don't have to get on a plane. They're right in their home stadium, so that's pretty cool for them. This Super Bowl will also feature a matchup between the two youngest combined age head coaches in Super Bowl. Head coach Sean McVay, who has already made one Super Bowl. He is 36 years old. And Zach Taylor of Cincinnati, who is only 38 years old. So pretty impressive young coaches right there for both the Bengals and Rams, respectively. So, Joe, just, I guess, early thoughts for the Super Bowl. Like, you don't have to give me a prediction or anything, but I know you mentioned the offenses. What are you kind of looking forward to? I guess we'll go with that.
I like Burrow because he's young enough in his career that he's still a little bit unpredictable. He still pushes the envelope a little bit. He still makes those like bravery type of things. I like that about it. And again, two young offenses, or I should say some of your wide receivers even have that same pedigree where they're still interesting to watch because they put themselves out there a little bit.
No doubt. Okay. All right. That's good. I'm definitely looking for just an entertaining game. I am kind of on your side of like, I really don't want OBJ to like kind of quit on the team and then light it up and win. You know, no ill will really, but I guess in the sense I'm probably going to root for the Bengals, but I'll give it a week and sit on it and simmer on it a little bit. But I thought this was cool, and this guy deserves, to me, at least in the city of Cincinnati, the Educator of the Year award. The superintendent, I believe, of the Cincinnati Public Schools has already declared the day after the Super Bowl a holiday. So no teachers, no kids will have to report to school that day in Cincinnati. And I'm sure some of the suburban schools will do that too. So I just thought that was neat for him to already put that out there. Like, hey, go ahead and plan your Super Bowl parties. Let your kids stay up, whatever. You know, this doesn't happen very often. It's been, 33 years for the Bengals since they've been there. So pretty cool. You know, what do you think about that? Should the day after the Super Bowl now, because I think the Super Bowl is watched by, I'll put a number on it, probably roughly about 100 million people around the world, and probably about 50 million at least are watching in America. So when you're saying about 1/6 of your population, 1 out of every 6 people are watching that game, staying up till whatever time, do you think the next day, and this is, I can ask this as a yes or no, but you can go open-ended if you want. Should the next day after a Super Bowl be a holiday?
Grumpy Joe says that we take too many freaking holidays off.
Okay.
So moves the Super Bowl to Saturday and then take off Sunday.
Ooh, that's an interesting scenario. Move it to Saturday. I kind of like that. I kind of like that idea. It's not a half bad idea right there. That's,
I mean, because how many people take some, you know, adult beverages in on a Sunday and then work's a little rougher than it normally is.
Right. That's true. I think I like it maybe as a floating holiday. You know, in Cleveland, if the Browns ever make the Super Bowl, the whole next week, people are probably taking off, you know, up until whenever there's a parade or whatever, if they do win it. But I think whatever cities, maybe just give the kids the day off of school, and maybe give the parents, you know, that don't maybe have pressing jobs that they have to be at, let them stay up without any consequence for one day. you know, if it's like the Boston fans when Tom Brady was there, which we'll get to Tom Brady in a minute, but like, they're making it every year, you know, screw them. They don't need an extra day. No. But, you know, if it's places special. Cincinnati and, you know, the Rams haven't been there for a while, you know, stuff like that. So I don't know. But
can I ask you a football related opinion? Not having
to do absolutely.
With the Super Bowl.
Sure.
I saw a quote, and I don't even know if it's true, about Urban Meyer and his experience in Jacksonville.
Okay.
That it was the worst experience of his life.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
I guarantee it was, because everyone could have told you when he took that job, he was so used to winning everywhere he went. Bowling Green, Utah, Ohio State, Florida, he coached at Notre Dame before, like everywhere, you know, like at most what you're losing 2 games a year. You're not used to losing. And when you add in pressure and expectations, and you got to deal with men now that are not college kids. These are grown ass men that are paid professionals. It's a whole different ball game to coach in the NFL than it is in college. And, you know, I guess you give them some credit for taking that challenge, but you've seen so many guys, Nick Saban, Steve Spurrier, so many other college coaches that have been successful have failed and then come back to college. And so we have another one that we're going to talk about here in a minute.
Spoil that one for you.
that might be taking a new job as early as tomorrow. So let's get real quick to Joe Burrow. I just saw this weekend as well. This is a really cool thing. Joe Burrow could be the very first quarterback to win a Heisman Trophy, a national championship, and a Super Bowl within, a 3-year stretch. So, I mean, that's a pretty, pretty amazing thing. And last year, you know, Joe Burrow, I think only played 7 or 8 games because, I mean, he got injured and it was a bad injury. You know, he pretty much tore up his whole knee. So credit to Joe Burrow for doing great things at an early, early age. So well done, Joe. He's kind of bordering on that confident, cocky swag. And I don't exactly know where I think he lies right now, but I kind of like it where he's at. So I don't know. So one other thing, Cincinnati related, saw this. This is Tiger King related. But Carol Baskin says, I haven't been this excited about the Bengals since this one ate my husband. So, you know, we all know the drama of Carol Baskin. If you watch the Tiger King, that was a big, I have not seen the new one, but the first season was a quarantine special for me on Netflix. All right, let's start with one of the quarterbacks we have known for so many years. He's been our rival, but I love this headline. It is from Dan Lobby from Cleveland.com, and it says, longtime Steelers quarterback winless versus the Browns in the playoffs retires. I thought that was the best written headline of all time. Obviously Ben Roethlisberger, I think, went 13-0 against the Browns at Heinz Field, but his only loss came in the playoffs. And obviously that was in epic fashion. The Browns won that game. So that was just so, so great. But what a headline there. I thought that was worth the shout out there. So let's obviously go to the other one. This actually just became official about 2 hours ago, but Tom Brady, 22-year career. He is 44 years old, soon to be 45, I believe, 7-time Super Bowl champ. If you don't believe me, just count the rings on his fingers. 5-time Super Bowl MVP, 3-time NFL MVP, 15-time Pro Bowler, 15-time All-Pro, You know, just holds so many records in the NFL. Just an unbelievable, unbelievable quarterback that has done so much and will go down. I have so many slides on Tom Brady and so many talking points. So I'm just going to spend a couple minutes on him because it's deservedly so. Here's another great one from 11 Warriors. 11 Warriors is an Ohio State account. And it says, Tom Brady, famous for losing football games and annual bets to Ohio State, has retired from football. And every year, you know, his teammates and him, you know, the teammates that went to Michigan, the teammates that would go to Ohio State would make a bet. And obviously this year, Michigan got the better of the Buckeyes. But for so many years, Brady had to live up to those bets from his Ohio State teammates. One of them, for many years, being Mike Vrabel, who now is the head coach of the Tennessee Titans. So let's look at some more of these stats. These are just unbelievable. Regular season holds the record for most wins in a season, 243. Most passing touchdowns, 624. 84,520 passing yards. That's just in the regular season. In the playoffs, 35 wins, 86 touchdowns, and 13,049 yards. If you put that into perspective, you know, this past year, Baker Mayfield had, I think, 15 touchdowns. So that would be two and a half times Tom Brady has two and a half times what Baker Mayfield did this season in just his playoff career, which is pretty unbelievable if you think about it.
This feels like a little man crush that's happening.
I'll tell you what, like, because he's a Michigan quarterback, and I actually will say this. I used to not like Tom Brady at all. And I think over the years I've come to really respect him and what he's done. And he kind of has that what's that movie? Brad Pitt, where he ages backwards, Benjamin Button.
Yes.
He kind of almost has that going for him where he's like, he looks younger at 44 now than he did when he was 21 coming into the NFL. And to me, that's something impressive too, you know, like to take that many hits and, you know, to have the stress level and all that responsibility, and then to, you know, go out and, you know, he's not technically going out a Super Bowl winner, but if you look at his stats, he very well might be the MVP of the league this year. And to go out and retire as an MVP is something impressive. So what's your thoughts on Tom Brady overall?
I mean, I'm with you. You can't achieve that and not give you some accolades for it. Mm-hmm. I got sick of seeing him, and I got sick of him dominating just because there are so many other great teams that, you know, really didn't get to do you know what they could, because he kept knocking people out of that, you know, the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But I think the secret sauce for Tom Brady is who you marry. So
that's a good point.
Supermodel it.
Yeah.
And you live forever.
Exactly. And I don't care if you're Tom Brady or not, you always outkick your coverage if you're marrying Giselle. So very, very good. And I saw, I can't remember who put this out, but from 01 to 07, from 08 to 14, and from 15 to 20, basically Tom Brady had three separate Hall of Fame careers, which is just amazing. If you break down his numbers over those, you know, 7 year, 8 year increments, he had a better career than most other quarterbacks and his peers and cohort, or whatever you want to say, in those groups throughout those years. So just an amazing, unbelievable run. And then, you know, maybe just to close out my man crush on Tom Brady. And again, a Michigan quarterback, but he was kind of a Michigan quarterback. You know, I think he might have just went 1-1 against Ohio State. I can't remember. I don't really even remember the game. But, you know, again, being a Patriots quarterback, I couldn't stand him. I actually just sort of, I think the respect and hype sort of started coming over the last 2 or 3 years, you know, when he went to Tampa, when he kind of broke off from Belichick. And, you know, Bill Belichick, still, you know, you got to give him credit, one of the greatest coaches of all time, probably the greatest coach of all time in a lot of people's eyes. But, you know, you break off from him, and a lot of people said it was kind of like a, you know, duo there. And then the Patriots struggle last year, and then Tampa goes on and, you know, has always had a good team, but then Tom Brady takes him over the top and they get the Super Bowl.
Feels like a LeBron James and, you know, wherever he went.
Exactly. That's a good, excellent point. Excellent point.
Well, I do feel the Patriots, like I feel like they're the Yankees of that. Mm-hmm. You just hate them only because of the dominance.
Yeah,
that they always.
No doubt. No doubt. Yeah. It's kind of, you know, they've been so good. And to, if you think about it, I guess, if you're so good and people can't stand you, that's almost a sign of respect.
Yeah, right.
You know, like we can't stand the Steelers, but that's because we're Browns fans and they've beat up on us for so many years that, you know, there's an inherent respect there to those teams. So, you know, I guess you can, we still hate you though. The team, not the city. But not see, the people.
Honestly, though, that's the what team. Makes football fun.
Yeah, is that exactly.
You get to hate another team mm-hmm. for that reason.
Exactly. Yeah. So for a couple hours on a Sunday and maybe, you know, a little bit leading up to it or a little bit after it, that's fine. But, you know, then, you know, kind of put your hatred aside and put it away.
And since I don't follow, you know, other teams all that closely, like I don't even know the rivalries. I think what Minnesota and Green Bay are rivalries.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe I don't even know any of the West Coast
most teams. Of the rivalries are usually just regional based and like, you know, there's some cross country, you know, there's some like in baseball, you might say, oh, the Yankees and well, you know, it's the Yankees and the Red Sox, but right. Like if the Yankees and the Dodgers ever played, it'd be like New York versus LA, even though it's not really a rivalry, they make it a rivalry. So, the traditional rivalries are based on regionality, you know, so like the Browns and the Steelers are always going to be a rival because of location. The Browns and the Ravens will always be because they're in the same division, but you also have the, well, Baltimore left, you know, Cleveland left for Baltimore, and that'll always be there. And then you can kind of say the Bengals and the Browns because they're in the same state, they're in the same division, but they're not necessarily rivals because they both kind of stunk for a while. So they are rivals, but not, you don't hate them as much as you hate Pittsburgh or you hate Baltimore. There's like the hierarchy of hate, I guess right. You could say.
Well, and then there's teams like in baseball, like the Indians / Guardians. I always felt like Detroit were your nemesis because of they'd always get in your way, or
exactly.
Denver was your nemesis because they were always in your
That's way. A good point. A lot of people probably that are in their 40s or 50s probably hate the Denver Broncos more than any other team because, you know, Denver, you know, got in the way of the Browns possibly going to three separate Super Bowls. So like San Francisco and LA, who just played this past weekend, there's a big baseball rivalry there. The Giants and the Dodgers, they hate each other, and that spills over to other sports as well. So it's interesting to see the regional rivalries and how works they come, out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The stories behind
them. Exactly. Exactly. So just one other thing with Tom Brady in the Pro Football Focus era, he is the highest graded quarterback. So that's been since 2006. And if you just look at the other names on this list, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, Patrick Mahomes, every one of those guys is a Hall of Famer. Patrick Mahomes obviously will become a Hall of Famer. Drew Brees in the near future will. Aaron Rodgers in the near future will. But just a great, great list of quarterback names on that. So I guess we'll kind of close the book on Tom Brady, but you know, he's still going to be around. Most regular season wins by a quarterback, not even close. Brett Favre is the next closest at 186. So what, about 47? I think that's quick math behind, 57 behind. So Favre and Peyton Manning with 186, where Tom Brady is at 243. So just an unbelievable run by a great, great quarterback. And then this is where this kind of brings you, I think you mentioned something about this earlier, but like, you know, we call a lot of people the GOAT, you know, the greatest of all time. You know, Tom Brady, I think, has put himself in that category. And this, I think, will be a whole show segment in the future. But, you know, if you look at some of the greatest all time, a lot of them have been in recent memory. If you think about Michael Jordan, or if you think about Tiger Woods, you know, I was not around for Muhammad Ali. I was not around to see, you know, Wayne Gretzky as much, you know, think people like that. But there are so many great people that do what they do. I mean, if we talk women's tennis, we're talking Serena Williams. You know, if we're talking women's gymnastics. We're talking Simone Biles, a lot of recency in the greatest of all time. And you could put that in there. So, Joe, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yes.
If you could pick any athlete in any sport in any era, who do you think, in your opinion, is the best athlete that's ever done it in any sport?
I'm going to say Jordan. Okay. Just overall performance and aura and just anything he touched, he dominated.
And
besides baseball.
And I mean, the guy, if you look at the NBA uniforms right now, I mean, half of them have the Jordan, insignia on the logo. So, I mean, just the shoes and everything, you know, outside of just the actual basketball is transcendent. So I'm going to put that up there. I'm going to give this a little bit more thought, but I thought that would be a good question maybe going forward. Like maybe if you had to come up with your Mount Rushmore of greatest of all time, but you could only pick, you had to pick four separate sports. I think that would be a good question. So maybe we'll pose that, put that out there.
The only thing I don't like about greatest of all time is when you compare eras, that it's a different game in some of those cases where
100%.
If you take somebody from today and take them in the league back then or vice versa, they might not be the greatest as you thought they were.
That's an excellent point. And if you look, especially now, the way the game is played in football compared, you know, it used to be a ground and pound league. Like that's all you would do. You know, you'd run it. You could say Jim Brown was maybe the greatest football player of all time because that's what he did. He ran the football and he did it the best of anybody in the league at the time. But if Jim Brown was in the league now, he'd still be great, but he probably wouldn't be putting up those numbers because it's a passing league. You know what I'm saying? So,
and everybody's stronger and they're bigger.
Exactly.
And everything's more sophisticated where they wouldn't be able to compete. It would be like watching a high school team.
Mm-hmm. And I love your example of different eras because everyone loves to compare Michael Jordan and LeBron James. And to me, that's one of my biggest pet peeves because it's like, why do we have to compare these two? Because, you know, they're both basketball players. They've both done amazing things on and off the court. But, you know, if you're just comparing championships, okay, Michael Jordan has 6, LeBron has 4. But if you're comparing most points, then LeBron has more points than Jordan and this and that. But LeBron's also a 6'8 forward, where Jordan was a 6'6 guard. Jordan's probably about 60 pounds lighter than LeBron too. It's like, to me, it's just, it's not quite apples and oranges, but maybe oranges and grapefruits. I don't know. You know, it's not quite the same exact thing, but they're close. So I don't know, but I like how you said that with the,
they're just great eras. Players of their era.
Yeah. And maybe you could say they're the greatest of their era and then move on with that. So, but if you have to pick one, whatever, pick one. So, and we'll go with that. So let's check in on some of the NFL job openings that are still out there right now. 4 of the jobs have been filled. So the New York Giants have hired Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator Brian Daboll to their job. The Minnesota Vikings, this is not official, but there are reports that Jim Harbaugh is flying out there tomorrow for a second interview. Tomorrow is also National Signing Day for college. Now, a lot of colleges already have their players signed from an early enrollee period, but I think that's very interesting for Jim Harbaugh on National Signing Day. You know, some guys maybe still remain uncommitted or have committed to play for him and that school, and then he goes and maybe takes a head coaching job. So that is very interesting. And to me, where there's smoke, there's fire, and I think that's where he's going to end up. Joe, what do you think on Harbaugh?
I think you're right. I think you have that season, and it opened up the interest and. And Minnesota is a place I can see him fitting in.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, like we rag on Jim Harbaugh a lot, but he was a good NFL coach, took the 49ers to a Super Bowl, did a lot of good things there. But I heard this analogy this weekend. Somebody said he's like, you know, your little brother when you're playing video games and you're just beating him up all the time. And then he finally gets that one win in, drops the controller, leaves and walks out. And he's like, I beat you. I'm done. I'm walking out. So that's kind of what, you know, he was 0-5 heading into this year against Ohio State. can say they ducked them last year with the COVID stuff. And then this year come in, and granted, they beat us this year. They beat Ohio State, and but, you know, walks out, and like, to me, he's like, all right, I got my one. I don't know if I'm going to get another one in the next 5 years. So everything.
Well, this will be a good test to see if I hated him because he was the Michigan's coach, or yeah, I hate him because he's a Harbaugh. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Well, I will say I actually like his brother, John. I think he's one of the better coaches in the NFL, and maybe they're just more likable in the NFL, where for me, it's like whoever coaches Michigan, I probably won't like a lot, but Jim Harbaugh is just a goofy ass dude. And I think that's the best way I can describe it. He's just a weird guy, and he's easy to like poke fun at. I will say he's good at his job. He's a good offensive mind. He knows what he's doing, but obviously couldn't get it done against some of his biggest rivals in college. He got a punch in this year, and he's walking away. He's walking out. So we will see 100% for sure if that happens tomorrow. If it does happen, I don't think they're going to let him walk out the door if they do want him, but we'll see how that goes.
And we'll see who gets the Michigan position. Urban Meyer's available.
So. Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah. I am pretty sure Urban Meyer would not go to Michigan, but you never know after last year.
He's a winning team.
Yeah, he does. He does. Yeah. But
never.
Oof. Oh, that would be like a script you would take to Hollywood that they would be like, get the hell out of here. But maybe, you know, we look back on this year, you know, in a year from now, and you're like, holy shit, man, Joe nailed it on the head with Urban going to Michigan. That was so real quick. Job openings: the Saints are still open, the Texans are still open, the Miami Dolphins are still open, Jacksonville Jaguars are still open. So the Raiders have hired Josh McDaniel. It was kind of Josh McDaniels. He actually is from Canton, from right here in the 330. You might remember him. He took the Denver Broncos head coaching job before. He was actually Tom Brady's offensive coordinator forever. He actually took the Indianapolis Colts job a couple years back and then backed out of it last minute to stay with the Patriots, which kind of blacklisted him, I think, a little bit in the NFL. Matt Eberflus, I think that's how you pronounce his name, the Colts DC, ends up taking the Chicago Bears job. Nathaniel Hackett, Packers offensive coordinator, goes to Denver, to the Denver Broncos. And there has been a lot of speculation that that is where Aaron Rodgers might head. You know, you follow your OC from Green Bay to there, kind of an easy fit. You kind of know what you're doing already. So very, very interesting. We will see how the rest of these job openings pan out, but I thought that was really interesting, especially with the Harbaugh news. So we'll see how that all goes.
In years past, I thought the Monday following the end of the regular season, there were a ton more firings. I didn't see much of anything.
There were a few this year. They usually call it Black Monday in the NFL. And there were a few, I want to say like the Texans and maybe the Giants were in there. But if you remember, like Gruden got canned early, Urban Meyer got canned early. And then I think there was just like a trickling effect after the season. So yeah, 9 job openings out of 32. So what is that? That's a little over 25%. That's like 30% almost of your NFL head coaches that are going to be turning over in the next year, which is crazy. And then Joe, this is amazing. This next stat's amazing. John Carroll, which is up in Cleveland, John Carroll College, has an enrollment of 3,000 undergrad and grads. 3,000 total is their enrollment. Okay, I want to make sure I get that right. But listen to their alumni that are in the NFL. So Raiders coach Josh McDaniels is now there. Raiders GM, who came over from New England, Dave Ziegler, is from John Carroll. The Chargers head coach, Chargers general manager, Tom Telesco, is from there. The Texans general manager, the former Jags GM, David Caldwell, the former Colts GM, Chris Polian, and then the Ravens offensive coordinator, Greg Roman. And then The Chargers head coach, Brandon Staley, actually coached there too. So pretty amazing if you think about it, a very small school outside of Cleveland that has produced that many NFL head coaches. We know about the coaching cradle right here in Youngstown that has produced so many college head football coaches. But that's a pretty amazing list, really, when you think of a school that small that has produced so many NFL coaches and executives. That's just amazing. So whatever they're doing there is working. So and then I got to share this stat too. This is amazing. During the 2021, now this is just a regular season stat, but so think about whatever your favorite TV show is, you know, that's on regular cable, streaming, whatever it might be. During the 2021 NFL season, NFL ranked 91 of the top 100 telecasts on TV, including the top 16, and then 48 of the top 50. That's a pretty amazing stat when you think about it. And when you think about the money that these guys are being paid and the money that is coming in, that's all television money. So that money is why these networks get, you know, fight for these leagues and fight for these contracts. And that's why these owners bring in so much money, and then they can share that money with revenue sharing amongst each other and amongst the players. So when you're wondering why a guy is being paid so much, that's why, because people love the NFL. People watch the NFL. So real quick, because I did do this on a recording last week, so I'm not sure how many of you guys caught this, but I did a quick mock draft. I'm not going to go through the whole list, but I do, you know, looking at this offensively for the Cleveland Browns and the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think the Browns have several needs to fill. One would be wide receiver. Probably one and two would be wide receiver. I think the Browns need some linebacking help. I think they need some, offensive line help, some defensive end help. But I have the Browns taking Garrett Wilson, the wide receiver out of Ohio State. I could easily see them taking, his name is Drake London. That is a name I would say, really remember that name, Drake London. He is a wide receiver from USC. You probably didn't hear much from him this year because he broke his ankle early on in the season. So not a bad injury, but an injury that kept him out for an extended period of time. But he's like a 6'5", 200-pound receiver that, you know, is just can stretch the field, but also get it. And Garrett Wilson's kind of like a Swiss Army knife. He can do it all. He can, you know, be your possession receiver like a Jarvis Landry, but he can also take the top off of defense and, but he has amazing hands, can catch just about anything. So I think the Browns probably go wide receiver early in the draft. Joe, I know we've talked about that. That's just a glaring need, for sure. You know, and whether they address it in free agency, I think they still have to draft.
All right. So in your opinion, let's just say we do take the first pick and add a wide receiver to the roster. What do you do with Landry or Higgins? Do you then...
I think both of those guys are gone.
Gone.
I really do. I would like to see Jarvis Landry back, but I think they're going to have to restructure his contract. If you look at the numbers, he's scheduled to make like $16 million this year. And for the production he gives you, it's not worth it from a financial aspect. So if they can say, hey, you know, Jarvis, well, let's tear that up and we'll give you, 3 years, $20 million or $22 million. So he's guaranteed more money, but it goes against the cap a lot less. So maybe he makes $7 or $8 million next year instead of that $16 million cap hit. So that's the only way I think he comes back. I love Jarvis Landry. I think he's the best Browns football player that they've had the last 5 years, you know,
besides Austin Hooper.
But yeah, that's another guy. That's a guy to keep on your, you know, radar for changing up his contract or possibly a trade too, because he's making a lot of money next year and he's hasn't showed he's worth it. But, you know, the Browns have a lot of things to address. Quarterback is number one. You know, what are you going to do with Baker? That's a whole can of worms right there. So, whether they bring in a veteran, whether they bring in, keep Baker and stay healthy, they're still going to need to address that wide receiver position and get that quarterback, whoever it is next year, Baker, Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo, whoever it might be, a weapon. And so real quick, switching to the Steelers now, Haskins and Mason Rudolph. They're it, man.
Haskins,
I think, has, you know, by far the higher ceiling. He showed a lot of maturity issues, growing pains. I think Ohio State wanted him to come back for another year to develop and get better. But it actually worked out for the Buckeyes because they got Justin Fields. But for Haskins, it didn't quite work out as well because he was kind of thrown into the fire and he kind of wasn't ready yet. So if he develops, if he grows up a little bit, I think he could be a decent quarterback for the Steelers. I'm not saying he's the answer, but I think he has potential. Mason Rudolph, and I know a lot of Steeler fans are probably with me on this one. I think they're ready to move on from him. For sure. You know, they're ready to hit him with a Steelers helmet in the head as well.
I always feel bad, though, because these Ohio State quarterbacks just wash out once they get the NFL.
Yeah.
They convert them to wide receivers, and then they go away.
I think the times have changed, though, where you're going to see a bunch of – there's going to be a run of Ohio State quarterbacks going early on that are going to be, you know, they might not be all pro caliber, but I think they're going to be successful because I think CJ Stroud next year will be in that top couple pick mix. I think Justin Fields in the right situation can succeed. I think Haskins, if he does it, could be okay. And then Ohio State now has Ryan Day, who has been a proven quarterback producer in the NFL. I think he's bringing that to the Buckeyes, whereas before it was a lot of guys that were more athletes playing quarterback. Now they're quarterbacks that they're developing into passers, into, you know, guys that study the game. And I'm not saying that those guys like a JT Barrett and Braxton Miller couldn't do it before, but they weren't NFL caliber quarterbacks. So you're not wrong. Okay. You're definitely not wrong. But I think the times are changing where, especially, they need some of these guys to pan out. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of Ohio State coaches are really hoping that these guys pan out, because then you can sell that to recruits coming in. But Ohio State gets five-star guy after five-star guy. It's just a matter of if you're the starter at Ohio State, you're probably – worst case scenario, going to be a second or third round pick, you know, but it's up to you. If you play well enough and you have the intangibles and you have the size and all the measurables, you're going to probably be a first or second rounder. So
who do you think of all of the rookie quarterbacks this time? Who struggled? Who was your not bust, but looking like it might
this
be
past season? Yeah. Well, Trevor Lawrence, you know, going one overall was in a bad situation.
Right.
But he didn't show like continued improvement throughout the year. They got beat up in a ton of games. So Trevor Lawrence was a little bit of a disappointment. Justin Fields was injured a lot, so he didn't play a ton of games, but he played fairly well once he got comfortable. You know, there was about five or six games where I thought he showed some things. Matt, I'd say you got to give it to Mac Jones this past year based on just what he did, taking the Patriots to the playoffs. You know, that's impressive, you know, especially being a rookie quarterback in the NFL and taking a team to the playoffs. So I would say him. You didn't see much out of Trey Lance, who's the backup for the 49ers. You didn't see much out of Zach Wilson because he really stunk when he was in. And I'm trying to think if I'm missing anybody else, but those are the guys that stand out to me. But, you know, I think out of that group, if you're redrafting them, let's say for after the year, you're probably saying Mac Jones one. You're probably saying I'd still probably put Trevor Lawrence two because he does still have the most upside. I would put Justin Fields three, and Trey Lance and Zach Wilson are kind of just an unfinished product. So I'll give them an incomplete. You know what I mean? If I'm grading them, so they have a lot of room to grow. But I do real quick want to touch on this point. The Pittsburgh Steelers, I think, you know, are going to take one of two positions. I think they're either going to take, there's our friend from Russia checking in again. Interesting. So I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are either going to take an offensive lineman or a quarterback. So I had them taking Malik Willis, quarterback out of Liberty. And I had two quarterbacks going before then. the Saints taking Matt Corral out of Ole Miss and Kenny Pickett going to the Broncos. But as I stated, Kenny Pickett and the Broncos might not be a match now because the new head coach might bring in Aaron Rodgers. So there's a lot of dominoes to tumble. So this was just kind of a first crack at it. We'll see how it goes. I'll try to put one out in about a month or so, and then one before the draft and see how we do, because it's not really a science. It's just kind of a guessing game, and you know, we'll see how that plays out. All right, just a couple more things before we close out. I just want to spend just a couple minutes on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Sunday night was an ugly game for the Cavs. They actually started that game up 15-0 and ended up losing by 10. They were up by 15 points. Like I said earlier, they were up by 9 with 9 minutes to go, but just a bad fourth quarter. Pistons end up beating them. But then last night, shorthanded, they bounced back and beat the New Orleans Pelicans 93-90, which puts their record at 31-30 for the season. The Cavs have 15 wins on the year versus teams with a 500 or better record. They also have held 21 opponents to under 100 points, and any more in the NBA, that is a feat, because teams are just putting up a ton of points left and right. They were 11-4 in the month of January, and the trade deadline is looming. The Cavs have 4 games before the trade deadline, and I think they're going to make a move. So listen for names like Dennis Schroeder, who is a point guard for the Boston Celtics, previously with the Lakers, previously with the Atlanta Hawks. Listen for Eric Gordon from the Rockets, who they're going to be playing actually on Wednesday night. So look for that. So the Cavs are at Houston on Wednesday. They're at Charlotte on Friday, and then back home next Sunday with the Indiana Pacers. So Cavs, again, looking very, very good. Their preseason over under was 26.5. They're already at 31 wins with 30 to go. So Darius Garland, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, kind of the big three for the Cavs, doing just great things this year. Darius Garland did not play last night, but you had Jetty Osman step up. You had Goodman stepping up for a point guard yesterday, and just a really, really nice team performance. Kevin Love, our old friend Kevin Love, with a great game, dominated in the fourth quarter last night and playing big minutes for the Cavs when they truly, truly needed it. So just some great stuff right there. And then real quick, check in on the Eastern Conference standing. The Chicago Bulls and Miami Heat are tied for first, but look at the Cavs right there in fourth. Only one game behind the first place Chicago Bulls and Miami Heat, with the 76ers only a half game back. So Cavs are doing some amazing things this year, really pushing the limits, but I think they are, I think they're prime for a trade, because they need some scoring off the bench with that second unit. And also the All-Star game's coming up in Cleveland. The Cavaliers will host it this year. Pretty cool thing. They hosted it 25 years ago, and that was the NBA's 50th season. This year is the NBA's 75th season. They will announce the 75 greatest players at that game. But the starting lineup for the Western Conference is Steph Curry, Ja Morant, Nikola Jokic, Andrew Wiggins, and LeBron James. Andrew Wiggins is an interesting one. He got elected by fan votes, and apparently the Warriors paid this Korean, it's called K-pop, it's like Korean pop music, paid this guy to like tweet out about Andrew Wiggins and got a bunch of votes for him. And so that got him in the All-Star game. That's the Western side. The Eastern side is Kevin Durant, Giannis, Joel Embiid, DeMar DeRozan, who's really had a great, great comeback year this year, and then Trae Young. I think you're going to see Darius Garland and Jared Allen make the All-Star team because it's in Cleveland, and also because they deserve it. They're having great years. So that's kind of where we're at with the Cleveland Cavaliers. We will have plenty more on them going forward. So with that, we'll come back and have plenty more for you on Thursday. Thursday will be a recorded show, because Joe and I are probably not trekking down here in an inch of ice or a foot of snow, depending on what it is. So everybody out there, stay safe. I'm Justin. That's Joe. Everybody have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.